This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. We begin today with the latest on Patriots owner Robert Kraft's charges of soliciting prostitution. The Florida State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg, held a press conference just moments ago.
This charge is a first-degree misdemeanor, punishable by up to 1 year in jail, a mandatory $5,000 fine, 100 hours of community service, and a class on the dangers of prostitution and human trafficking.
Joining us now for the latest on the story is WBUR sports and society reporter Shira Springer. Shira, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you were just watching that news conference in Florida. What were your big takeaways?
Well, I think the big takeaway was on Friday we expected it to be a second-degree misdemeanor. They have upped it to a first-degree misdemeanor for exactly the reasons Dave Ehrenberg stated, which was the mandatory 100 hours of community service, the mandatory $5,000 fine, the up to a year in jail time if convicted, and the class you'd have to take as well if convicted. Also, I thought it was interesting that Ehrenberg made a point of emphasis of saying this isn't about one person. Clearly, I think a reference to this isn't about Kraft, but it is more about human trafficking and what that involves. And, you know, he talked about it being modern day slavery, that that's what was going on at the spa. And he really wanted to put an emphasis on the victims of the crime.
I noticed that, too, and though he also mentioned that when you do have a splashy name like Kraft in there, perhaps it is a chance to have a conversation that we don't have often enough. That was one of those things.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly, when you're having a press conference to announce the charges and the summons and the warrants that are going to be issued, you see this opportunity, and, you know, Florida and Palm Beach County have seized it. I think, also, by the way, it's also worth noting that a summons was issued for Kraft. He has multiple residents in multiple states. They do consider him a Palm Beach resident, but that summons does not mean that he has to appear in court.
Interesting. We also saw a statement earlier today from the NFL. They had issued a preliminary statement on Friday, and they gave us a little bit more today, and I'll read that. It says, quote, "Our personal conduct policy applies to everyone in the NFL. We will handle this allegation in the same way we would handle any issue under our policy. We are seeking a full understanding of the facts while ensuring that we do not interfere with an ongoing law enforcement investigation. We will take appropriate action as warranted based on the facts," end quote. And sure, you know, we've also heard from a couple of current and former Patriots players in recent days. I'll begin with Devin McCourty, the current Patriots safety, speaking with NBC Sports on Friday.
You know, I think when you see things come out like that, you always just got to let it play out, see what it is, what it isn't, and go from there.
And we've also heard from Teddy Bruschi, the former Patriots linebacker, now an analyst for ESPN, speaking on the air Friday.
It's a tough, confusing time right now for myself, for a lot of fans of the New England Patriots, that something like this would happen to the leader of an organization that everyone in this region, you know, I guess, looked to the way things should be done in the right way. And this is it's a tough day.
Happen to, Shira. You know, the language there is striking to me. And as I look at those statements from McCourty, from Bruschi, from the league, what I don't see is a condemnation of the acts. Isn't it possible? I mean, couldn't they come out and not convict Robert Kraft while at least condemning the acts? They're not doing that.
Yeah, and I actually think that's not the way athletes think. And I think it's certainly not the way Patriots players and former Patriots players think about Robert Kraft. There is, for better or worse, a sort of an aura around him and a lot of respect, at least prior to this incident, for Mr. Kraft and his philanthropy and the way he conducted himself and the way he did business in the league. And I think it is hard at this point for current players and former Patriots players to make that leap to condemning, if not Kraft, even the human trafficking aspect of this case.
So the league is clearly trying to say that they're going to take this very seriously. And on our air on Friday, you mentioned the example of Jim Irsay, the Colts owner, getting some discipline from the league when he faced drug charges some years ago. I'm wondering if you can kind of compare and contrast that with Donald Sterling getting pushed out of the NBA as an owner altogether when he was caught on tape making racist comments. I mean, those are two very different responses from two different leagues. What can we expect in Kraft? Somewhere in between those two?
I think with Kraft, I mean, first of all, when the league says we are seeking a full understanding of the facts, you have to kind of read between the lines. Their definition of a full understanding of the facts is not necessarily what our definition of a full understanding of the facts is. As we know, in past cases involving domestic violence, they have failed to get videotapes. They have failed to interview the players involved.
The Ray Rice tape comes to mind, right?
The Ray Rice tape comes to mind. The Kareem Hunt tape comes to mind more recently. And so you have to wonder exactly how hard they are going to actually investigate this case. But with regard to Donald Sterling, it's an interesting case. I think, first of all, the NBA and the NFL are completely different leagues. There is a very low tolerance for any morally or ethically bad behavior in the NBA, whether it involves something that happens inside the league or something that happens outside the league. And with Donald Sterling, the other aspect of it was that he said something racist. He was caught on tape saying something racist. And the majority of the players in the NBA are African-American. So there was that issue. And they wanted him out of the league. Also, you're dealing with two very different personalities. Robert Kraft, prior to this incident, was a very well-liked, very well-respected owner in the NFL. You could not say the same about Donald Sterling in the NBA.
That is a big difference. I will point out that Kraft has spoken through an attorney, through a spokesman, I should say, on this. Hasn't changed his statement since Friday, which was just a total denial. Mm-hmm. of illegal activity. But mm-hmm. sure, I was struck by that wording. It seemed very careful to me, and I wonder what you make of it. He doesn't actually deny the acts, but he says he didn't break the law.
Yeah, I think we're going to see an interesting legal defense come out about, you know, with this. It, you know, and I think his lawyers are preparing for a strong defense. And it's interesting that the Dave Ehrenberg, the state attorney, did say that with the first offenders, you often have them pleading down. So I would expect from a legal side of this is all sort of the part of the gamesmanship toward pleading this down eventually.
All right. That's WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Shira, again, thank you for the time on this story.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll obviously continue to update you listeners on this story as it progresses. But we also want to take a step back and have a broader conversation that Dave Ehrenberg was talking about today. It has certainly raised some broader questions about sex trafficking in this country, how prevalent it is, and what else we can do to stop it. My Life, My Choice is a nonprofit organization here in Boston that is dedicated to that cause, to ending commercial sexual exploitation of minors in particular. And we're joined now in studio by Lisa Goldblatt-Grace. She's the co-founder and executive director of My Life, My Choice. Lisa, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having us.
And also with us is Audrey Morrissey, associate director of My Life, My Choice and director of its National Survivor Leadership. Audrey, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we're talking about sex trafficking more generally, but I have to start by asking you this. In 2015, Robert Kraft donated $100,000 of his money to your group, and I'm just wondering what's going through your head as you've watched this play out over the last couple of days.
For Audrey and I, for our team, for the young people that we serve, to be honest, we were devastated to hear these allegations. We were outraged. But what's important now is that we focus on the fact that this is happening every day in our communities all throughout Massachusetts and throughout this country. This is not, unfortunately, an anomaly. It's what is happening regularly.
I think your response reminds me of something I heard from Deborah Robin on Friday. She's the executive director of Jane Doe Incorporated, which is a somewhat similar group that works to prevent sexual assault and domestic violence. The Patriots Foundation has given her group $500,000, and she said that she is incredibly disappointed.
We are very disappointed with the headlines about Robert Kraft. Although we do recognize that this is still in an investigative stage, so there is more to learn about this. But even, you know, regardless, I think this is a really terrible turn of events.
And so, Audrey, the other thing that Deborah Robin said to me, though, was that that money from Robert Kraft has done a lot of good over the last 4 years for her organization. And she was hoping that we could remember that in the context of the story and then also use this news event as a jumping off point for the broader conversation that the Florida State Attorney was just talking about. So in the midst of these awful headlines, is there something we can salvage?
Well, the reality is that we have to look at, we keep hearing one name over and over again. The names that I'm concerned about are the victims. And again, how we can help and what we can do for the victims of commercial sexual exploitation. And we all know that none of this work gets done, right, without funding. And I agree with her. My heart is where the good use of the funds went, right, to help our victims. And for me, that is my focus, myself being a survivor of commercial sexual exploitation, the trauma that these women and children are enduring, that is my focus. And I know at My Life, My Choice, what we're going to continue to do is educate our young people train adults on this issue of commercial sexual exploitation of children, and even to take it a step further, I don't even want to stop there, that adult women are victims as well. That just because someone is an adult doesn't mean this is something that they've chosen to do. So what this has done for me is not, I don't want to focus on one person. My goal is, which it has been before this has happened, which will be after this happens, is to share my experience and my hope with young people and adult women, and the hope of helping them to come out of the being trafficked.
Well, to your point, I mean, there are adult women involved in this case in Florida, which is a sweeping case, we should say. I mean, a couple of hundred men all over the state arrested in similar circumstances. But in the spirit of what you were just talking about the women, let's talk about some of the details of this case. I mean, they're pretty disturbing. I mean, police say that they were allegedly sleeping on the massage beds, that they had to do their job on a daily basis. They were cooking food on hot plates, out in an alley in some cases. Some of the women were forced to serve more than 1,000 men a year, allegedly. And I know, Audrey, that you're a survivor yourself. So what's your reaction to hearing those kinds of details?
Well, that's heartbreaking, and they're true. And I know for me, when my heart goes out, when I think of those women, if I had to guess, I would guess that a lot of those women probably couldn't even speak English. I can imagine how it felt to be imprisoned, you know, because basically that was the case. And again, they're just as vulnerable as the children that we work with at My Life, My Choice. Even an adult, when you take an adult out of their country, their world, their family, and place them in a situation like that, the trauma is the same for the adult women as it would be for the children.
Lisa, we're talking about this case here because there were some high-profile local men involved. But it can be convenient perhaps to say, oh, that was a thing happening far away in Florida. Can you help localize it for us? I mean, what is the sex trafficking problem like here in Massachusetts?
Absolutely. Well, what's universal is that this is a multi-billion-dollar industry that preys on, as Audrey's referenced, the most vulnerable in our communities. And that could be a Chinese woman who's trafficked here. And that can be a young person who's grown up in the care of our child welfare system, who is looking for love and connection and hope, and finds that in a relationship with someone who then exploits and holds them. So whether it is an adult or a child, whether they are from outside the United States or inside the United States, whether they are being in this life because they have a gun to their head, because of their connection to their exploiter, or because of a simple lack of other options, the trauma and the violence is the same. And frankly, the thread here is dehumanization. For those women to have had to do that, it's the same as what happens for our young people who report having to service 10 to 20 men per night. That dehumanization has to happen. We have to see those individuals as less than human. And that's at the crux of this. And what is feeding this industry is the demand. We know that 1 in 5 men admit to having purchased commercial sex. And
1 in 5?
1 in 5 admit to having purchased sex. Now, it means the majority have not, right? And that's where the hope is. But we need to make a real cultural shift. We need to educate ourselves. We need to educate our children. We need to become active disruptors among our peers. So when, you know, that colleague mentions that bachelor party they're going to or crosses a line on a business trip, we don't look the other way. We understand that this is the root of this industry and that this is violence, and that this is never, simply never okay.
Do you see a shift at all that you're talking about, Lisa? And one of the things that struck me was on Friday, I was in charge of writing our online story, and in the first draft, I was using the police language here, that he was charged with soliciting prostitution. My editor said, huh, that's unusual language. I feel like we usually see it as soliciting a prostitute. And we were talking about this, and I said, I think it's because they suspect human trafficking in this case, and the police are trying not to label the women as prostitutes, but to put the focus on the men fans' action. Am I reading too much into that?
Absolutely not. Thank you for lifting that up. I mean, that has been the piece that has been heartening over the last few days is, you know, Audrey and I have been in this work for, you know, over 15 years, and the shift that we see connected to this, the way that law enforcement has stepped up in such a profound way, their language is on point, their work is on point, the way the media has covered this, for the most part, we're talking about a shift in language and a shift in thinking, and that's profound. And we have farther to go, and hopefully we can use this moment collectively to do that work.
And can I just add, too, with folks in the media who have the ability to really carry a message, you know, one of the things that I feel strongly about, even being a survivor, that no one has the right to buy and sell people. And I am a supporter of looking at how we can reduce the demand, right? Because if people didn't buy people, you wouldn't be able to sell people. And so that is the piece that I guess I'm asking of you to do, because the media can carry a message a lot further than we can. And as Lisa said, the media, law enforcement folks in Massachusetts have been doing a great job and educating themselves and using the correct language. But we have to really address the demand.
What else do you want people to know, Audrey? I mean, you talked a moment ago about wanting to share your own experience a little bit, and I take it that you do that with the survivors you work with. To the extent you're comfortable, would you do that for us?
Well, I probably wouldn't do that for you because it's not about me. Right now, and since I've been doing this work, it's about the young people. So what I do is to continue to mentor youth, continue to educate providers and train providers who are working with this population for them to better identify victims of commercial sexual exploitation. And my voice is used to really carry a message of this is something we can talk about. This is not a secret society, and we need to lift our voices up and really talk about this issue. And the reality is, like anything else, it's about education, education, education. And one of the things that I didn't, what I will share with you, that I didn't have, that we provide, I didn't have anyone saying, okay, attend this group when I was in school when I was 15 to prevent you from being recruited into the commercial sex industry. So I didn't have those things. And so I think one of the things that I, and we do a great job at it, My Life, My Choice, because for us, it is about the children. We also have to really, you know, look at the prevention piece and educate our children. And one of the things that I'll say is that towards the pimps that buy children, you know, I was always brought up, don't talk to strangers. But one of the fact of the matter is, in a lot of these cases of the young people we work with, the pimp is not a stranger. Mm. It's usually someone that they encounter on a regular basis. Sometimes it's as simple as my boyfriend.
Lisa, what are some warning signs, either before someone is sucked into this world or even in the midst? We got a little bit of that during that news conference mm-hmm. today. The attorney in Florida, Dave Ehrenberg, was saying, you know, for example, if you're at a nail salon and you notice someone who's afraid to make eye contact or who's not allowed to handle money, those can be warning signs mm-hmm. that someone is being mm-hmm. held against their will. I mean, what else can we be on the lookout for?
When it comes to our young people here in our communities, you're looking for someone who is struggling in any number of ways. And the kind of red flags that you might see, though, is she may or he may have new sneakers, new phone, new tattoos, new whatever, and you don't know where that came from. So you're seeing a change in what they have, but without having knowledge of where that came from. They're hanging around in some different spaces. You see their online profile, you see their online interactions, and those feel like they're crossing a line and that they're dangerous. I mean, there's a lot that we can be looking for, and frankly, any time that an adult takes an honest, caring interest in a young person, particularly a young person that may not be tethered to a safe, supportive family, that's trafficking prevention. That's what it looks like.
Audrey, I'm wondering if you know, it strikes me that for some of the men frequenting these massage parlors in Florida, there had to be some degree of willful blindness to go in and basically not think about or not ask questions about the condition of the women involved. But I wonder if it could even go beyond that, because in some cases we're talking about men of means. I mean, we've got a billionaire in Robert Kraft, J.W. Childs, another local connection, another very wealthy individual. Is it beyond just being willfully blind? Is it deliberately seeking out women who are at the bottom of society who are unlikely to speak out or be believed?
Well, I can't speak out for what they're doing and what they're looking for. What I will say is that a place that is really running trafficking victims through it, I mean, I could walk in a place and get a massage and see from the beginning that there's something shady going on. Right. But I can't speak for what they're going in looking for, what their expectation is. If I had to guess, a lot of people know what's going on and frequent certain places. And then some people go in places and find out this is what's taking place. But I can't speak for them.
And I will just note once again, these are charges against Robert Kraft and the other men involved. They have not yet been convicted. Lisa Goldblatt Grace and Audrey Morrissey from My Life, My Choice. Thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk about the key takeaways from the Vatican Summit on clergy sex abuse. I'm Callum Borchers, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.